I don't even know what to say. We're just buzzing.
I'm buzzing. Obviously, I'm buzzing.
Buzzing, really?
I'm absolutely buzzing, man. Yeah, I'm buzzing. I'm buzzing for the whole team. Buzzing for the fans. I'm just buzzing in general. What can I say? It's a buzzing feeling. I'm just buzzing. We managed to get the win.
I'm buzzing. I managed to get the goal.
I'm buzzing, really.
Yeah, we're buzzing.
I'm buzzing. I managed to get it sorted. Yeah.
Wilf, you must be buzzing after that.
Here I am.
Hello and welcome to pod 4 of the official Palace pod, where Wilf is buzzing about the Hornets this weekend. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube and the Palace app. This week, I'm all over the training ground, chatting to the kit boys, the academy director, stat man, and of course, there's Roy's weekly press conference ahead of the game against Watford at the weekend. But before all that, let's go back in time to a couple of interviews at Sellers Park before the Liverpool game. First up, it's a man who scored over 100 goals for Palace, Clinton Morrison. Yeah, Wilfried Zaha got a goal in his first game. How excited are you watching him play?
I love him. I've just been on the tour now and he's just a shy kid. I'm talking to him. I'm saying, I'm loving what you're doing. Like, I'm so impressed. And I'm not one of these who gets excited by football players. I'm just like, it is what it is. But that young kid excites me. He's got the world at his feet. He's a humble kid and he just wants to play football. He's like one of those who just play football in the playground. Go and give Wolf the ball and he'll go and win you the game. He's been exceptional and what a coup for him to sign a new contract at this club, because the fans appreciate him and I think he appreciates the fans.
Another guy, mate of yours, who calls you his second dad, Patrick Van Aanholt. He got an assist last week. He's doing well.
No, he's doing really well. I think we had a talk not middle of last season. I think it might have been after about 10 games and he's moaning, he's in and out of the team. I said, listen, one thing you got to do, you got to learn on how to do your defending. Everyone knows you're good going that way, but in the Premier League, it's totally different. I think since that chat, he's gone on leaps and bounds. He's been brilliant. He calls me most days and we have a talk and he says he's one of those, he needs to be loved, Pat. And I think now the fans are starting to love him and appreciate him. And for me, he's one of the best left-backs in the Premier League. And I'm not just saying that because he's my mate. But if you look at Robertson, he's going to play the left-back today. I'd say them two are probably up there. And Mendy at Man City. But Pat, if he keeps doing well like that, he's got the world at his feet as well. And he's only just turning 27.
And Christian Benteke, although he didn't score last week, he's already looking like the Christian Benteke of a couple of seasons ago. What's it like as a striker when you go through a bit of a barren spell like he did last year?
No, it's not good. You feel like you keep getting in there and the chances are good. I've always been told by someone, one of the best strikers around, Ian Wright, I said, what happens? I've gone through that and I don't know when my next goal is going to come. He said, the big thing is to do is just keep getting in there. The day they stop getting in there, you stop getting chances, that's when you have to start worrying. But I've heard Christian Benteke in pre-seasons looked really sharp. He looks like the old Christian Benteke, and against Fulham, watching some of the highlights, he did look like a handful. So hopefully he can have a good season, because we all know what Christian Benteke, when he's on form, he's one of the best strikers around in the Premiership. His career and his CV alone tells you how good he is.
And finally, because it's Liverpool tonight, for those that don't remember, anyone that's really young, tell us a story about when you played against Liverpool.
So we had a game here, it was a cup game. And I've scored a lot of goals against Liverpool, which is kind of, they always say I'm their bogey player, and I'd say I love playing against them. But we beat them, I think it was 2-0 or 2-1, and Michael Owen and Emil Heskey missed a lot of chances. So me being the young kid I was, I did an interview with a newspaper. But I didn't say what they said. I just said the form I'm in, I believe I just put away all the chances then. I must have had about 11 and 11. I was a cocky South London boy, as I was back then. And I just said I believed I would score. Next day, I go into training, or 2 days, the lads are looking at me like, what have you done? I said, what do you mean, what have I done? I just won us a game the other night. Don't tell me about what have I done. Looked at the paper, and it was like, Clinton Morrison, who would teach Michael Owen how to score goals. Well, I never, ever said that, and I would never disrespect Michael Owen, because fantastic striker and someone who I looked up to and learned. But when we played at Anfield, Owen was injured, and I knew I was going to get it, and we end up losing 5-0, but I get my chance. The ball falls to me in front of the cup. I think, here's my moment. They're booing me all night. It's a complete miss kick, air shot. Tried to get the rebound. The goalkeeper saved it. Just wanted the ground to swallow me up. Just wanted to get out of there. And Gary McAllister came up to me, tapped me on the shoulder and said, don't worry, mate. Michael Owen would have scored that. And I looked over to the bench and thought, all right, Gaffer, just please take me off. But I carried on going, full credit to me. But ever since then, it's been good banter with them. And I went to Birmingham, scored a couple of winners for Birmingham against them. So Liverpool fans don't like me. But I like Liverpool. But Palace, I want Palace to win tonight.
Cool. Thanks, Clinton.
No worries.
Enjoy the rest of your night.
Cheers.
striking coach to the stars, Clinton Morrison there. Now, a man who's a bit of a Palace legend on the journalistic front, The Guardian's London football correspondent, Dominic Fifield. A nice little chat about his role on a match day and also the logistics of working at a World Cup. We also got a gentle shower from the Sellers Park sprinklers.
Now, what I want to get is an insight into your job today. Can you just talk me through like what you do on a match day from pretty much when you arrive to later on?
Well, calm before the storm. This time I'm sort of doing a little bit of prep work, usually about the opposition. I'm lucky enough to know a bit about Palace, just because as a supporter you know about your club.
You allowed to say that you're a Palace supporter?
Yeah, I think that's out the bag, I think, unfortunately. And then when the game starts, we do something called a runner for first edition of the newspaper. So in effect you basically write your match report almost backwards. You send a large chunk at half time. If you split up into, say, three sections, you're sending section two first up. So if I've got 800 words tonight, I'll send 450 words at half time, another 150 words about 20-25 minutes into the second half. And then with crazy newspaper deadlines, archaic newspaper deadlines, I'm probably sending the introduction at about 88 minutes. Which can be interesting when Palace play Liverpool. I remember the Chris Sambul game. I was writing the sidebar that night, so I could file in one go, one hit, the whole thing. And I had to send it at about 80 minutes. And I'm pretty sure the score was 3-1 to Liverpool at the time. And Palace were basically out of it, well, maybe stirring a bit, but they weren't going to come back in. And Liverpool were very much in the title race. And by the time the final whistle went, and I was frantically trying to re-nose the copy, Liverpool's title was in tatters, and Palace have staged one of the great comebacks. So you're a bit of a hostage to fortune if things happen late. But after the game, I'll go back into the media centre, attend the press conference, probably write a quotes piece from the press conference, and I get a bit of time to rewrite my copy from scratch almost, if you want to. So hopefully for second edition and for later online, anything that has happened late is properly reflected in the piece.
I just wanted to ask you about the World Cup. What are the logistics like for a journalist working on something like that?
Well, I covered England. That's the fifth World Cup I'd done, been lucky enough to go to, and that was the third with England. And we're pretty much embedded near the England team, not with the England team, but we sort of attending. There'll be a media hotel put aside with a press centre in. Where you're attending press conferences every single day. In Russia, in Rapinia, they put a 10-pin bowling alley and a darts board and a table football and a pool table in there as well, so we weren't going out of our minds. But also when the England players came over from their hotel to do the press duties, they competed with us at those sports, those pub sports, all went off and played with each other. 10-pin bowling, etc. We had Ruben Loftus-Cheek doing that. It's quite impressive. We're going to get soaked.
That's a sprinkler going off next to us.
But so every day you're doing something. There'll be some kind of England media duty happening at that hotel. Yeah, so the day before a game, you're travelling to wherever England are playing, to the venue.
And that travel's put on by a company?
No, it's not done by the FA. It's there are sort of rival travel companies that compete for our tenure, basically. But we did travel as a group largely. I think there are probably about 30 journalists who were travelling together to the various venues and staying in the same hotels at those venues. So we were doing, I think we did something like 16 internal flights and four-hour train journeys between St. Petersburg and Moscow over the course of the 33 days we were there. And it's the busiest you ever are as a journalist, I think. I carried them up for a piece, actually, for the Palace programme against Liverpool. I think it was just shy of 100 articles sent in that 33-day period. Some of them very short. I'm not going to kid myself that I was writing 1,000 words each time. But there really is no respite. And you're there until England go home, effectively. In previous tournaments, I've always sort of stayed on and been lucky enough to go to the finals. This time, I wanted to come home early, so I said to the office before I could go, can I just stay out as long as England stay out, please, and then I'll get home early. I got home a day early in the end, so it was brilliant, actually, I have to say. But, you know, at Palace, you have got a member of staff who has, logistics-wise, put all this on for the press in, at previous World Cups, in Joanne Bardia, head of comms on match days, and she was in charge of setting up those media centres at the various venues from, I don't know, Poland in 2012, all the way back to France in 98. I'm pretty sure she was there then. Japan in 2002. She has been there and done it. And this was the first time without Joe. And, you know, as brilliant as the FA did, she was a big miss.
That's good to know. We'll end on that. Thank you very much. Pleasure. And well done for avoiding the water.
Thank you.
Right, let's put Liverpool behind us and get back to the training ground to hear from the buoyant kit room double act, Phil and Daryl. You may have seen them around the team. Phil looks like a better looking version of the robber in Home Alone who isn't Joe Pesci. And Daryl looks like a bigger and bearded version of his absolute hero, Soleil Kaikai. There's also a cameo from Danny the Kit Man, who looks just like Danny the Kit Man. Okay, I'm now in the kit room with two members of the kit department, Phil and Daryl. Phil, Daryl, Thursday before the game, what are you up to? First of all, Phil.
So we're just getting everything ready now, so we make sure the players got kit all printed up, all their shorts, extra shorts, it looks like it's going to rain, socks and everything else they need, all their extras in their bundles, ready to go.
Now, Daryl, you've got a white pair of shorts there underneath a hot press. What are you doing with them?
We're just printing down the second shorts for Czech right now. So every player has two shorts in case, like, first half it gets wet, blood or whatever goes on it. But right now we're just doing the second shorts for their game against Watford on Sunday. So, yeah, we're just printing up the second numbers on them.
You two spend a lot of time together. Do you like each other?
Yeah, we sort of have to, don't we? He was sort of forced upon me. And we've moved in together now. So, yeah, we have to like each other. We work quite close quarters, don't we?
I actually don't like him.
Daryl, I understand Phil cooked for you last night. Yeah. How was it?
To be fair, I wouldn't want to come on this podcast and lie. It was good. Good chili con carne. Rice was a bit salty, but I let him off. I don't really mind too salty rice. You know? I let him off. He's no Frank or the chefs upstairs, but you've done all right. Done well.
Now, notice you've got white shorts there, so that means that Palace are going to be playing in the sash kit for the very first time.
Indeed.
Any challenges for that for you guys?
Lots of vanish.
Keeping it white.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting one because we're white and red, so I'm going to try and keep it as white as we can for the rest of the season. But yeah, so mate, it's a clash with the Watford goalkeeper kit.
Danny, the big boss, has just walked in. How is he to work for?
Perfect, mate.
Best club to work for.
Yeah, best boss.
Definitely.
Perfect timing for that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, looks after us.
It's all them days off he gives us, do you know what I mean? But yeah, no, he's ledge. He's very, very cool, so laid back. He's not in your face and stuff, so it's easy to work for him, to be fair.
Finally, from each of you, which player is the easiest for you guys to deal with, the funniest?
I know who you're going to say.
Andros.
I love Andros. He's the funniest.
Hardest to deal with. Funniest.
I think the funniest is, for me personally, Andros is out there. I say Punch for me. Punch is funny. Yeah.
And Alex Sorloff, easiest to deal with. Gets on with it, doesn't he?
Who else?
Tonks,
Sorloff. Most of them, yeah.
Who's the most demanding?
The most demanding player. In terms of what? Kit?
Yeah.
I think we're quite lucky, aren't we? Look, none of our players are completely high maintenance.
Nah. I say, who would...
Maybe
don't know, you know.
Just because they have loads of stuff.
Patrick. Patrick, no, he's not too bad, really. Yeah, no, Patrick's all right. I say, yeah, he's up there, but he's not. Yeah. No one sticks out.
No, we're quite lucky. We're very lucky.
Feels quite good. He sorts them out properly, so he doesn't. No one asks for anything.
Thanks, guys. So, confirmation: the team will be wearing the sash on Sunday. After chatting to the boys, I headed down the road to the academy to catch up with academy director Gary Issett for his thoughts on the 18s and 23s starts to the season, plus an update on Luke Dreyer. Gary, it's been a winning start so far for the under-23s and the under-18s. Are you confident they can carry on from where they left off last season?
Yeah, I think so, and I think the results have shown that. The big thing now is trying to get out players on loan before the 31st deadline. And then we'll know how that leaves the groups, whether we'll be an older group if players haven't managed to get out on loan, or we might be, you know, two younger groups if they have gone.
When it comes to getting players out on loan, are you actively calling people up and offering players out and sending them footage, or are you inviting them to come and watch games?
All of those things, you know, you're doing everything to get the players into senior football as quickly as we can, into first team football. I mean, the audience might not be aware, but the rules changed 2 years ago, where now the loan window has to follow the transfer window. Before, it could be pretty fluid, and it could be, you know, in October, in November, in December, when League One, League Two teams get injuries. But now that's been taken away from clubs by the rules that FIFA have in place. So it's definitely a lot harder to get lads out on loan, because it's got to be in that August 31st window, when a lot of clubs haven't had injuries yet hit, and you know, think they're going to be okay.
I think it was back when Alan Pardew was here, they brought in a slightly different system, in that you were kind of letting go more players who were over the age of 21 and moving people up an age band, so the 18s were playing for the 21s. Do you think that has really has helped a lot?
I think it's getting the balance right. You don't want to push players on too soon, and also you want your teams competitive. So I think it's getting the balance out. The lads that need to go and test themselves and go on loan, they go, and hopefully they create interest, you know, from our first team manager or other clubs in their sales. And then you're left with a cohort of players that you're trying to push the early developing players up into the age groups, but the teams they go into are still strong enough to compete. I think if you make the teams too weak, then sometimes the individuals can't stand out as such. So it's trying to get the balance right, as like everything in life.
And finally, Luke Dreher is a player that we've talked about quite a lot. What's the latest on him?
Luke is close to full fitness. He's had a fragmented pre-season. You know, he had a disappointing year last year. He was riddled of injuries. So we're just hoping now that it's never easy when you have a broken pre-season to then continually stay fit. So we're being very careful with him, but hopefully he'll be integrated back into, I think, the side on Monday, or sorry, Tuesday, that goes and plays in the 23s. That's away at Burnley. And then it's a gradual process back into the team from there.
Thanks, Gary.
Okay.
Good news about Luke Dreher after what has been a tough time for him. And in other news... Good news about Luke Dreher after what has been a tough time for him. In other injury news, my dodgy hamstring is aching from running back up the road to get all the stats from Statman, as he visited the training ground to give the players some Nando's vouchers. That's not even a joke. He was actually doing that. Right, I'm now joined on the balcony here at the training ground. It's a lovely sunny day today, by Statman. Statman, how are you doing?
Hello, Chris. I'm all right, thank you. I do feel I need to start with an apology, though. A big one, really, to you and to all the listeners. I made a prediction, didn't I, with my stats last time. I think I got a little bit too carried away. Sacco and Tompkins, unbelievable run of 14 unbeaten. I did say that they'd probably not lose, didn't I?
No, you didn't say probably not. You said they definitely wouldn't lose.
I did. And, you know, I'm learning. And I've learned there that, you know, shouldn't have said it. And from now on, you will get the stats, the whole stats, and nothing but the stats. There'll be no further predictions from me. Just stats for you, Chris.
Okay. Let's move on to stats then. What have you got, Statman?
Right, I got some cracking ones. There were some great ones just starting from the Liverpool game that just happened. That red card for Wan-Bissaka then, he got an unwanted stat for that. He became the youngest player for Crystal Palace to ever be sent off in the Premier League. He was 20 years and 267 days old when that happened. So not a wanted stat, but a stat nonetheless. And unbelievable one here. Have a guess how long Palace went without getting a red card.
I actually know this because I've been keeping an eye on it ever since it happened. About 2.5 years, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather you didn't get the predictions right. You put me out of a job. But yeah, that is correct. We went 2.5 years without getting a red card. Whatever happened to the Fair Play League? Whatever happened to that?
I know. It's shocking, isn't it? And, I mean, that was quite an impressive red card as well, if I remember. It was Pap Suarez, wasn't it? Against Watford.
Yeah, I mean, again, a stat I would have liked to have linked on to, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, Pap Suarez against Watford all the way back in February 2016. So, unbelievable that run that we went on. Which leads me nicely on to Watford then. So, what a big game we got coming up on Sunday. Hornets against Eagles. And the record, Palace's record at Watford, and particularly, sorry, against Watford and at Vicarage Road in particular, is a pretty strong one. We're unbeaten in the last 7 against Watford at Vicarage Road. And in fact, in the last two meetings between the two sides, we've lost only twice against Watford. So quite strong stats there.
In the last how many meetings?
In the last 16 matches.
16 matches, wow.
16, yeah. That one impressed you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I'm very impressed.
And then, but in terms of like, Watford themselves, it's not going to be easy. Obviously, they've won their last two now. And if they do win on Sunday, it'll be their best start to a season since 1998. But for Palace, we're in good form away from home. We've gone five unbeaten since that 2-1 defeat at Chelsea on the 10th of March. That was our last defeat away from home. And if we can make it six unbeaten, it would be our longest unbeaten run away from home in the top flight since 1992. So decent away record at the moment for the Eagles. I'll move on then to the men to watch, really. And I mean, as predictable for Watford, really, the big man, Troy Deeney, got a good scoring record against us. He scored in four of the last eight against Palace. I like to say that's five against eight. And why is that? You're nodding.
Because he scored for us.
He did. He scored the winning goal for us in that lovely 1-0 win in 2017. But yeah, as ever, he will be a man to watch on Sunday. And for us, I mean, the big man, the stat's still there. Wilf just one goal away still from becoming the all-time top goal scorer in the Premier League for Crystal Palace. Looking at the stats, though, it doesn't look particularly promising for him, at least against Watford of late. He hasn't scored or technically assisted either in the last six. Now, this stat's a bit unfair. It's very unfair, in my opinion. We all remember the pullback to James McArthur probably last season for the winner in the 90th minute. Well, I don't agree with this, but the Premier League's official statisticians say that took a significant deflection on its way to James McArthur.
It's nonsense.
It's nonsense, and they took it away from him. So I think that's absolute nonsense. I'd like to give him that one. And of course, who can forget the penalty that he won in 2013 to get us into the Premier League. So I'm backing Wilf. So.
Also, again, September 2015, he won a penalty for when we beat Watford then. But they don't count, Opta don't count penalty winning as an assist, but Fantasy Premier League do.
Make of that what you will. Yeah, madness, I know. But those are my stats. If you want a summary then, Palace got a good record against Watford, especially at Watford. Not going to be easy. Watford in good form though.
Oh, cool. Thank you very much, Statman. I'm off to congratulate Aaron Wan-Bissaka on his new record. A fine performance from Statman today, and good on him for apologising. And now, as always, we finish off the pod with Roy's weekly press conference. Have a buzzingly good week.
Hi, Roy.
Hi.
Wan-Bissaka is suspended. You've got to make a change at right back. What are your thoughts on that and any other early team news?
Well, we're fortunate we don't have too many injury problems at the moment. That's good. But, of course, Wan-Bissaka, as you say, we can't play him, but we've got Joel Ward and Martin Kelly, so we have two players who can play right back and have played right back, so we have good alternatives and good substitutes.
You didn't appeal the red card on Monday night. What about Wan-Bissaka though for England next week? There's a squad coming up. Is he playing well enough, do you think, for an England's slot?
You mean the full England team?
Well,
I don't like to make those judgments or to answer those questions. I've said too many times before, I trust quite fully in the people who run the under-21 team, the national team, to make their decision. We're very, very happy with him. As far as the sending off's concerned, I would have made the same decision as Michael Oliver in that situation, without a shadow of a doubt. I know that when you analyse it in slow motion, you could say he was very unlucky because the ball control had been lost, and it was a bit of an unfortunate collision. But in the heat of the game, I thought he'd fouled him, and that obviously as the last man, you pay the price. But we were chasing the game at the time, and I can't blame him for it at all. I'm more than happy that he had the willingness and the desire and the strength and the pace to get as close to Salah as he did. That was quite an achievement, I think, on the counter-attack. So he probably deserves a lot of praise. But we'll miss him, and I'm sorry for him, Decomp.
Roy, Christian Benteke hasn't scored in two games so far. You subbed him on Monday when Palace were losing only three goals last season. Do you think he's going to start scoring soon?
Yes, I do. Yeah, he's working very hard. His performance in the game was good. He wasn't subbed because of any particular wrongdoings. It was a chance to get some fresh legs on the field, They had to work quite hard, our two front players, as did the rest of the team, to control Liverpool as I thought we did. And the substitution was just to get a similar player with fresher legs onto the field. But he's working very hard and he needs that break that all front players need. And unfortunately, when you are a front player and you are signed for relatively big money and you're a big name player, if you're not scoring goals, unfortunately, you're always going to be under that microscope. But there's nothing we can really do to help him other than show our confidence in him and hope that the break will come one day, that he'll get that goal and it will lead to a flood of goals.
Maxim Meyer came off the bench on Monday. Is he ready yet for a Premier League start, do you think?
Yes, he is. Yes, he's been very good. I think our first two games, I've been more than happy with the performances, both against Fulham and Liverpool. I think the team that I've chosen to play has played well. But with Max Meyer, but I'll also add Kouyaté and Jordan Ayew, I think all of them have been very, very impressive in training. And they can feel themselves perhaps a little bit unlucky that at the moment the ones that I've actually chosen have played well enough to keep them out of the team. But I wouldn't hesitate to put any of those three into the team. Same applies to Vicente Guaita.
If Max Meyer, though, does get a start on Sunday, what kind of impact do you think he's going to have for Palace?
Well, he's a good player. There's no question of that. I think his CV proves that. I think the things that were written about him and how he was talked about before he came here, that's basically what he is. He's a very good footballer. He's capable of playing anywhere across that midfield positions, either in a three or a four, he can play anywhere across there. He's quick-footed, and he's similar, funnily enough, to a lot of players that seem to be coming into the game at top level here. You know, Kante, of course, was obviously one, but you know, now we see the Keitas and the Torreiras and these type of players coming that many years ago people would have looked and said, "Oh, he's too small. You know, he's not tall or robust enough." But in actual fact, their qualities and their pace and their energy means that they are more than big enough to play. So I think we've signed a player who seems to be finding a position in many teams in the league.
Royce Watford on Sunday, they've had a great start, but the last few years Palace have been a real problem scene for Watford. You think back to the playoff final last December at Selhurst, there was that smash and grab late win. Do you agree that Palace are a bogey team now for Watford?
I don't think in those terms. It's a good, you know, you're reminding me of the historical results, and in doing so, I can understand why they might think that. But I've got to say, I don't think that way. We don't judge teams along those terms. We judge them in relation to the threat they're going to cause us, and any weaknesses we think we might find to exploit. That's everything for us. We don't think in terms, well, this will be an easy game because, you know, we're their bogey team. Quite the opposite, I think, really. The danger with believing that you are someone's bogey team is that you might be very disappointed one day when they play well enough to beat you.
And Roy, the last two games at Vicarage Road, there have been diving controversies involving Wilf last April. He said afterwards there was an agenda against him. The previous match, Harry the Hornet was on the pitch diving behind Wilf. What did you make of all that, and has there been an agenda? Is there still an agenda against Wilf Sahar?
That's his words, not mine. I mean, if you're asking me whether Harry the Hornet, who I presume is the mascot, should dive in that way, I think it's disgraceful. You know, because that's not what football matches are about. You know, and certainly if it's provoking the crowd into looking for something which isn't there, it should be stopped. Wilf Zaha does not dive for penalties. He gets knocked over sometimes. Sometimes he gets knocked over or unbalanced without it necessarily being a foul or a penalty, because he runs at such speed and he's got such agility with the ball. But he certainly doesn't dive. But of course, unfortunately, if teams try to take every advantage they can, you've mentioned the mascot, I would be very disappointed if a Crystal Palace mascot was doing something like that to provoke the crowd against an opponent. And if I found out about it, I'd stop it.
Just one final one. The loan window is closing soon. What are your thoughts, your feelings about possibly loaning out Punchin, Williams or Suari before the end of the month?
Well, we don't have that many players, you know. I mean,
if you loan out those three, we might be trying to put a team out. We've got a very, very small squad of players here. We've added three and lost five from last season. So, I'm not anxious to loan players out. When it comes to those individuals you mentioned, we listen to, what options are available to them. But most importantly of all, what we're going to have to do is to look at the situation and say, can we afford to let this player go on loan? Much as though, he might not be first choice here at the moment, and much as though he would obviously relish the chance to get a more regular game or a better chance of a more regular game, they are contracted to us, and the big question will always be, can we afford to let them go?
To get them fit, though?
Oh, they are fit. All three, all those players are fit. Having said that, perhaps Ware limped out of training today with a slight muscle problem, so I might be telling you a lie when I say he's fit. I haven't spoken to the physios yet, and I don't quite know the extent of that injury which forced him to limp out at the end of the training session. But he was as fit as a butcher's dog at the start of today's training, as were the other two.
Thank you.
Thanks.
James from PLP.
Hi, Roy. If you take last season into account as well, Palace on a pretty good away run of form. Is that something you've tried extra hard to focus on, getting the away performances better?
Honestly, no. I mean, we try very hard to get all our performances better, but we don't differentiate in that way. The way we try to play is fairly consistent. I mean, obviously, we take very much into account what the other team does and where their strengths are and where we like to have problems and even work at that during the week. But we don't change our general philosophy, our general principles. And then we certainly don't change them in that way that, right, this is an away game, that means X. But next week we're at home, that means Y. We definitely don't do that.
And Wilfried Zaha needs one more goal to become the club's all-time Premier League goal scorer. And given the new contract as well, I guess he must be pretty excited at the moment.
Yes, he's excited. Wilf is a pretty enthusiastic sort of trainer, especially if you're doing the type of things he likes to do. Then he's an extremely enthusiastic trainer. But he's working hard in his goal scoring this year. I've noticed a big difference in the intensity with which he approaches goal chances, certainly in training, and that will carry over into games. And needing one more goal to beat Chris's record, I don't think there's any doubt that he'll get it. The big question is when he'll get it, and then the next question will be how big a margin of goals is he going to rack up so that his record lasts for a long time to come. Chris Armstrong's has lasted quite a long time, so I remember trying to buy him out of Blackburn Rovers.
Okay. Just one more. I know that some of the away performances in particular have been very pleasing to you. What have you seen in the first couple of performances this season that have really pleased you? What's the most pleasing aspect, I guess, this season so far?
Yeah, I think the fact that we've been able to pick up so quickly from where we finished last season. We finished last season very strongly. I thought the way the team was playing then, the shape of the team, the attitude, the application that the players were putting into the games was very good, and I've been delighted that through a pre-season we've managed to retain that. And of course what we do now, we try to work harder to become even better, because there aren't many coaches who will sit in front of you and say my team's a finished article. We all believe there's a margin for progression, and I know that I've got a modest and humble enough group of players to understand that too, but it pleases me that we aren't suddenly searching desperately for the play that served us so well towards the end of last season. We seem to have found that very, very early on. And of course, now the trick is to keep it. It's all very well, like you say, Watford has started well. And, we've had two games which I'm more than satisfied with, but this is the third one. And, you start always with a clean slate. And however pleased you might have been with the game before, it doesn't necessarily affect the next one. You've got to come out and find what has made you good in the last ones and bring that to the field again. And that sounds like the most obvious truism of all time, but that is what being a professional sportsman is about.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Anita. Yeah.
Hi, Roy.
Hi.
What do you expect of Watford this week, and has their start to the season surprised you?
Well, I expect a very tough game for a start. I expect a very competitive game. I expect a team that will be as anxious to do well and get points from the game as we are. And I think the start to their season has been excellent. You know, it couldn't be better, you know, to take 6 points as they've done. So they've really got to be delighted, because the league is about points, and, you know, doing well in the Premier League is getting those points on the board as quick as you possibly can. So to get 6 from 2, they've got to be cock-a-hoop. So we're aware that we're going to go to a ground, Vicarage Road, which is always a problematic place to go, in the sense that, you know, you're going to get a very tough game, and the opponents are going to be doing everything they possibly can to make your life difficult.
As you mentioned, they've had an excellent start to the season. We've obviously seen that they've got firepower not only in their strikers, but in the midfield too, with the likes of Roberto Pereira. How are you going to stop them on Sunday?
Well, we did quite well, I thought, on Monday night, stopping Watford for long periods of time. Liverpool for long periods of time. I thought we did quite well in that respect. And, you know, they're pretty renowned for their firepower as well, not only up front but through midfield. So the shape of the team and the quality of and effort that we put into our defending, I've got a hope that that will serve us in good stead again against the Watford team, who have also got lots of, as you say, firepower and lots of threats. Luckily, we believe we have a few threats of our own, and we're hoping, therefore, that it will be a competitive game. I'm sure it will be a hard-fought one, because there's an element of derby about it, even though we're not exactly on top of each other in terms of our two grounds. But our fans and their fans will be desperate to see their team win the game, so everything is set for a very good game.
Right, we saw at the World Cup lots of close games, lots of goals, and very few draws, and only one goalless draw. In terms of the start of the Premier League, we've seen a similar thing. So how much has football changed? Did it change because of the World Cup, or was attacking football and goals always going to be in?
The question is far too philosophical for you. First of all, I'd have to accept the premise that the World Cup gave us this. And then I've got to accept another premise, that the start of the Premier League has given us that. And I'm afraid I don't know if I can accept either premise. I'm not so certain that the attacking football that I saw in the World Cup was anything near as exciting as the attacking football I've seen in the first couple of games of the Premier League. And I thought a lot of the games in the World Cup were really either attack v defence, or teams where one team is so clearly superior to the other. You don't see that in the Premier League to the same extent. So I'm afraid your premise escapes me to start off with. If I reduce the question to a simpler level, do I think that the Premier League has started strongly this year with a lot of goals, a lot of, you know, offensive-minded football, a lot of teams anxious and willing to play on the front foot and not just try to keep the score down, then I'd say, yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. And I would have thought our game against Liverpool was a prime example of that. I don't think too many people expected us to go anywhere, anything like toe-to-toe with Liverpool, but I thought that we did for long periods of the game.
Sunday's game features two strikers. Christian Benteke, you've already spoken about, you think will start scoring goals quite soon. Troy Deeney for Watford, who is a big man. He likes to, in inverted commas, bully defenders. Could it be one between those two who comes out on top?
Well, both of them will depend on how their teams play, won't they? You know, Troy will need good service and Christian will need good service. I don't doubt for one minute that both will be working very, very hard to bring their qualities to the game and for their team. I think they're both, you know, very serious professionals in that respect. And we just have to wait and see, you know, which one comes out on top. But Troy has got a very good record through the years of goal scoring, as has Christian, except for last season where he disappointed in that respect. But that doesn't mean for me that he's lost anything of his qualities. I think we're talking two top-class centre-forwards here, both of whom are difficult to handle because, as you rightly say, there's a degree of physicality about their play. Correct physicality. I'm not suggesting for one minute it's unfair. I think I wouldn't want to use the word bullying. I don't know that that's a tactic that either of the two players or the clubs would wish to use. But, of course, the players need to use their physical strength and their ability in the air to help their teams. That's why we bought them in the first place, these type of players.
And finally, the goalkeepers, you know, Ben Foster very well.
Yes, Ben Foster.
Lovely guy, obviously very good goalkeeper. And Wayne Hennessy, I mean, did nothing wrong last season and has stepped up to the mark with the competition that's coming in the summer.
Yes, very good. I mean, I agree with you about Ben. I'm a great admirer of his, enormous respect for him. He did a fantastic job for me during my time at West Bromwich Albion. I actually did sign him there as well. But Wayne Hennessy this season had a fantastic start, and I think in Vicente Guaita and Julian Speroni, we are as well covered as a Premier League team can be in terms of goalkeepers, A, in terms of competition, and B, in terms of each and every one of them being more than capable of putting the shirt on and keeping a clean sheet for the team.